You're listening to the Humans of DevOps podcast, a podcast focused on advancing the humans of DevOps through skills, knowledge, ideas, and learning, or the SKIL framework.
And we see this all over the place with open source. I think a lot of the time, the people who make successful open source are just making a hobby project of some kind, something they need, and then it becomes an essential piece of internet infrastructure.
In December of 2004, a group of IT students from DIT University in Copenhagen has launched an open source beer. The 1.0 version was described by those students as a great tasting, energetic beer, and it's world's first open source beer. It's based on a classic ale brewing tradition, but with added guarana for a natural energy boost. The aim was to see what happens when an open source structure is applied to a universally known product like beer. Hello there. This is Evelyn Ehrlich. We are not here to talk about beer, but we're here to talk about open source. And I brought this introduction because I think it fits in multiple ways. You will find out yourself, but I'm a beer brewer by hobby, so that caught my attention. Our podcast title today is Open Source Brew and Tea. Now, a few more details, which is very different. 97% of commercial code contains open source. And I actually learned this from our guest when looking at some of the tech trends, such as containerization, like Docker and Kubernetes, originally developed at Google and released as open source in 2014. Big data, like Apache Spark, with Hadoop or Kafka, a lot of open source is out there. Again, as I said, welcome to Humans of DevOps podcast. I'm Evelyn Ehrlich, Chief Research Officer at DevOps Institute. Today, we have a very special guest, and I'm excited to have him with us for multiple reasons. Max Howell, CEO of T.xyz. Hello, Max.
Hi there.
Welcome to our podcast.
Thank you. I'm pleased to be here.
Yes, excited for you to be with us. Tell us, the first thing really I'm curious about is your journey into and across open source.
Yeah, well, it's a fairly good story. So I did a chemistry degree because I thought I wanted to be a scientist. And in the process of doing that degree and then doing a year in the industry, I discovered that actually it was really not for me. I was working with this this device that measured surface tension for like various chemical solutions. And I realized that if I kept working there, like in 10 years, I would still be using that single machine and making very minor contributions to the world. So I fell into this sort of depressing funk and discovered open source. Programming was always something that I'd considered a hobby. My dad taught me when I was six, which, you know, very young, but I only used it to like make video games, essentially, like most kids do when they learn to program. And I never really considered it for a career until my career was on the rocks and I didn't know what I was doing with myself. So I fell into open source by installing Linux, and I loved the community. I loved how everyone was super passionate about what they were doing and just doing it because they wanted to do something that changed the world or improved their workflow or just making cool things. And I ended up working on a few apps with people from all over the world, and it was just like nothing else for me. Honestly, it's difficult to find it as good as it was when I first got into it, and we were all on IRC together. And doing that led me to getting a job in the industry, which, you know, it's kind of luck in many ways, but there was a company in London that used one of the apps I was working on and invited me to go an interview, and it wasn't really as much of an interview as just having a chat. So I managed to get myself into the industry, and a few years later after that, I kept doing open source, and so I created Homebrew, which is one of the biggest open source projects of all time at this point. And I'm sure you'll have some more questions about that.
Yep. Yep. Keep going, because I will come, we'll come back to that.
So I created Homebrew because at the time we were making all these different apps. I was at Last Femme in London, and we made six different apps. One was for Linux and Mac and Windows, and we had an iPhone app and an Android app and even this BlackBerry app. And we built them all on Mac because Mac was like the unified platform at the time. And well, it really has become the platform for development now, but this was 2008. And at that time, like, developers hadn't really decided what platform they were using. It was all over the place. There was still a lot of people using Windows for development, which, you know, it's not as common nowadays. And in our office, there was an awful lot of people on Linux. And I was one of the few who'd converted to Mac because Apple had a bad rep with developers. It's hard to believe now, but it's easier to believe over the last few years. But there was certainly a period where everyone in development used a Mac. But that was new. And we were using it because it was the platform that you could do Android dev, you could do Linux dev, you could have a Windows VM running. So we could do all six platforms quite easily. And like the package management solutions were acceptable. They weren't great. And they certainly weren't designed for developers. Package managers turned up with Linux. And in many ways, they were the thing which defined the Linux flavor. And it's still the case. But I kind of felt that they were designed for sysops and DevOps, but not development. So I wanted to build something that was more for that. And so I got on with it. And after a few months, I realized that it was kind of neat. So I open sourced it. And then it took a few months before anyone noticed it. But then when it got noticed, it took off like amazingly quickly. Huge amounts of contribution, but a lot of excitement because I'd managed to tap into something which people wanted. People needed, especially with this burgeoning developer platform, which was what the Mac was becoming. And so here we are, like almost 14 years later. And it's an enormous project at this point. It's very hard to meet people that haven't heard of it or used it.
You know, I have watched your speak at Web Summit in 2022. And you talked about something there called the Nebraska problem. And in honesty, I've been in infrastructure and operations for a long time, but I'm not a developer. So maybe that's why. I've never really heard, I've heard of it, but I really don't understand or didn't understand what it actually meant. So can you give us a quick explanation of what is meant by the Nebraska problem and how it relates to the open source? And if possible, any examples you have seen recently, maybe?
Yeah, sure. So what we call the Nebraska problem is the open source funding problem. And we call it that because there's this famous XKCD comic. You'll see it trotted out whenever there's any discussion about open source funding issues. And it shows like this tower of blocks. And it represents all modern digital infrastructure. And then near the bottom of the towers is precarious little pillar. And it's holding the whole thing up. And there's an arrow pointing to it, which says, this open source package maintained by someone from Nebraska since 2003, thanklessly. And I certainly experienced this with Homebrew. Like, it was kind of the first time I'd really experienced it, because even though I'd done some relatively successful open source before that, I did work full time on a few projects before that, but I didn't have a job and didn't know what I was going to do with myself. I was still living with my parents, so I could do it. But with Homebrew, I had to have two full time jobs. One which paid and one which didn't. And I took some time off here and there so I could work on Homebrew full time. But I never had enough money saved up to work on it for a long period of time. But I couldn't abandon it because it was my easily at the time, like my greatest creation. I was extremely proud of it. But also people depended on it. And I couldn't let them down. I just didn't see how I could. So I work at, you know, my office job and often was doing some homebrew stuff, to be honest. And then in the evenings and the weekends, you know, I didn't really have a social life and just worked on homebrew. And that was all I wanted or needed, but it wasn't sustainable. And in the end, I did burn out on it. And I haven't really worked on homebrew since 2016. I passed it to the community, which, you know, I'm lucky that I could, that so many other people turned up. And this is how open source is and how it should work, of course. Community is essential to open source. And so it was good that I could hand it over, but I couldn't personally keep working on it. And we see this all over the place with open source. I think a lot of the time, the people who make successful open source are just making a hobby project of some kind, something they need, and then it becomes an essential piece of internet infrastructure. And they're stuck in a situation where they either like abandon it, and then that's not what they want to do, but they can't afford to work on it as much as they need to. Or they try to find funding, and let's face it, most funding doesn't work very well for open source. Like a lot of the time, they're Nebraska projects, is what we call them. Like a famous one a couple of years ago was Log4j, which is a logging software for Java applications. And there was a massive exploit found in it where you could root servers just by typing stuff in if the stuff you typed in would go through the logging software in some capacity. And no one had really heard of this package because it was deep in the stack. And this is how open source often works, right? It's like these essential pieces of software have been built, but over time they've just been buried on the things that are built on top of them. And you've got these like really mature pieces of software which still need to be maintained, and everyone's forgotten they exist. And Log4j was a great example of that. And they fixed the bug, and they asked that maybe they could get some funding in future so that they could afford to spend more time actually maintaining the software and maybe making sure it doesn't have these security holes in. And I don't think they ever received anything, because once the bug was fixed, everyone forgot about them again. And then more recently, there was Core.js, 9 billion downloads since it was released. The core of, you know, the base of every Node app that exists, everything that's built on Node or uses Node. And an essential piece of infrastructure, really. But the person who maintains it is giving up because they're just fed up with the fact that they don't get any funding. Everyone uses this thing. Everyone is extremely entitled about how they treat open source. I'm afraid to say it's often true. And he's just like, well, I can't afford it. I'm giving up. And what's going to happen? I don't know. That's not a good thing to lose the infrastructure of. And, you know, like I've done loads of open source. And the truth is, I really should have just been doing open source all these years. Like, I created one homebrew with the small amount of free time I had. People like myself shouldn't have to make a choice between working on software that improves the world and is beneficial to like all layers of the software stack, or some of the jobs I did were not particularly beneficial to the world, really. So yeah, that's the Nebraska problem.
Skill Up IT Learning is the perfect online destination to learn about DevOps and digital transformation anytime, anywhere. Our digital learning platform provides you with all the resources you need to upskill and learn about these important topics, including expert-led course videos, access to certification prep courses, and a community of supportive peers. Our subscription-based model makes it easy for you to gain the skills needed for success in the modern workplace. Visit devopsinstitute.com now and explore our different learning plans.
Wow, quite involved, quite complicated. And when you started out, you said, you know, this noble cause of contributing to the world, really, with what you have done with homebrew. We'll get to TXYZ in a minute, but I wanted to ask a couple other questions. Because of the topic of open source, there's still some people seem to not understand that perspective. So that's why I was very, very interested in your thoughts and in your journey there. Let's switch a little bit to the benefits in terms of leveraging open source, you know, take it from either the benefits into from a developer perspective, collaborating and into the open source community, or for the benefits of the community over in its large, meaning the world, right? Talk a little bit to us about what you see the benefits are of open source.
Yeah, well, open source is really interesting. I don't think that human history has really got any other equivalent examples. Like, markets usually appear because there's an economic incentive there. Like, I don't know of anything else like this, but I've been thinking about this quite a lot recently. And I remembered how in the 90s, the entire software stack was basically owned by Microsoft. And, you know, there was numerous issues with this, but certainly as the internet became a thing, it became more and more clear that Microsoft was holding the internet back because Internet Explorer was the only browser that anyone used. And they didn't want to advance it. They didn't care to. They had no real incentive. And it was this kind of attitude which led to open source taking more and more of a hold. In the end, like now, it's difficult to imagine a world where open source isn't the base of every stack. Like we say, 97% of all commercial software has open source involved in it in some capacity. And like, is there really 3% that doesn't? I'd like to see what those source bases and understand how they get away with not having any open source at all. Over time, we built the open source up and we swapped off the Microsoft stack. And it became like the point where developers realized that they not only gained like all this functionality for free, but also they were getting these step ups in productivity and proficiency. Mm-hmm. Because open source is usually designed to be like these tiny little self-contained pieces that you slot together and you build on top of each other. And then you've got all this like advanced functionality. But in the process of replacing Microsoft with open source, we never transferred all that money that Microsoft were making. Like, they were trillions of dollars in. And instead, we just sort of ended up with like this free base without real any maintenance on it, which, you know, we're trying to solve at T. But yeah, like the value of open source is people throw out ideas and the good ones stick. There's no marketing behind it. There's no like someone's trying to sell you something that actually they know isn't a good fit for you. You put some open source out there, and if it works for the developers of this world, they adopt it. Well, the sysop people of this world, they adopt it. And then over time, if it continues to fit, it builds until it becomes like a mature block in the stack.
So with that, there are challenges as well. What are some challenges you would say, again, from multiple perspectives, take it from the developer, take it from the community, or take it from the software world of vendors out there?
Well, I think vendors have the highest risk right now, right? But if you're building an app and it has 6,000 dependencies, there's no way you can vet that and be sure that all those dependencies are secure for a start, but also without any malicious insertions of any kind. It's one thing we're going to try and fix with what we're doing at T. But I do wonder how, you know, if I had to report to someone and say that our app is secure, we can guarantee that. I don't know how I'd say that with a straight face. If you've got 6,000 deps in there. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of risk there for vendors. I think developers, most of them just enjoy open source existing because it really does make computing more enjoyable in general, like especially now. Like 14 years ago when I made Homebrew, like the amount of people doing open source was so much smaller. Now you can't go a day without dozens of new things being released continuously. And some of those are great. Most developers feel bad that they just consume this open source and don't give back. But I don't see how they can effectively give back, right? Because You can try and sponsor a few open source devs here and there, but we're all using thousands and thousands of open source projects, and it's just infeasible without some layer of automation to contribute to those mm-hmm. properly.
Yep.
But open source developers are the ones that I feel for, but you know, most of them are just doing, they start off by doing side projects. It really is. It's like, it's one of the beautiful things about software engineering is that it's so cheap and easy. All we need is time. So if you've got an idea and you've got some time, you can create some open source. But what happens with all the open source devs I've talked to who have got successful projects is that after a while, it's a huge amount of work and you can't abandon that. You have to somehow find the time to do it. And like people like myself, the way I approached it was always to try and make it so that as much as possible, it was robust. And then, but if it did break, it would tell the user what they can do to try and fix it themselves. And I'd make sure the documentation was as good as they could get it. And that would reduce the burden on me as much as I could, much as possible. And you know, if you're lucky, a community turns up. Most of the open source I've done, communities don't turn up. Homebrew was really quite an exception.
Fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. So again, at the Web Summit, you said, I love this vision you painted. You said you want to support those who are passionate on open source development, but make sure that they get rewarded. And you actually called it, I love this too, a digital revolution for developers. What do you mean by that? And then we'll get to TXYZ, because I think there is a relationship. So tell us about the digital revolution for the developers.
Well, let's face it, in the ascent of Web 2, as we call it, which was, you know, mid-2000s till kind of recently, I'd say, a huge amount of money was made by people building on top of open source. And it was gradual, you know, like the way open source became so essential to what we're building in software was gradual. And I think a lot of these essential pieces, they were built by hackers who were building them for other hackers. And then when Web 2 turned up and figured out how to monetize all that, there wasn't any transition of wealth. And so that's why it's a digital revolution. Like these huge mega billion-dollar companies that have never really given any substantial amount to the open source that they depend on.
Mm-hmm.
It's not right. Like we're okay with it as it happened because it was gradual, but now we like, hang on a minute, you know, why am I working two full-time jobs when Microsoft has billions and billions of dollars coming in every month? Doesn't make sense. So what we're trying to build at T is a way to successfully remunerate how open source is funded. There's been lots of attempts, sponsorship, bounties, things like this, but we see that as being reward favorites. And some people make a lot of money with sponsorship, but the truth is there's millions of open source packages. And most of them are Nebraska projects that nobody knows about. Like React doesn't need to be funded because Facebook pay for it, essentially, which is another thing we want to fix, incidentally. I don't believe that these huge corporations should have so much agenda over how these open source projects run, that the community needs to figure out what makes sense for open source. Facebook could just like close down React tomorrow. What I'd want with what we're building at T is for these developers at Facebook and Microsoft who do work on open source or who are just extremely talented people to be able to quit and work on open source full time because the pay is exactly the same or better even. Like frankly, we're building an economy on code. And if you make a bunch of successful open source packages, providing you're using the T protocol, you could be much wealthier than you are currently as a software developer.
Interesting. So how can developers get involved? I'm sure we have a few of those who are going, ooh, I love this. I love hearing this. How can they get involved?
Well, 4 months ago, I released the T package manager. So T is the successor to Brew. You know, I stopped working on Brew in mid-2010s, and I didn't stop thinking about what could be better about Brew, but I didn't really have a good incentive, I feel, to make another Brew. I'd already done it. And I remember the tireless hours that I spent working on it, robustifying it, filling out the package graph, answering people's support questions, and just like trying to make sure it was a successful and useful piece of software. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really want to go and do that again. I think, you know, I like doing things once usually. But about 18 months ago, while I was looking into Web3 and crypto, which, you know, basically was the first time I'd looked into this stuff because I'd never been particularly interested in it, I thought Bitcoin was pretty impressive. Like, has a wonderful mystery story to it, but also pretty ingenious how it works and how it has successfully become so large, even though it's not controlled. But I never really thought that there was much more that was interesting there for me. But as I was diving into Web3 stuff, I started to see that digital contracts were actually pretty interesting. And I had this moment of inspiration while messing around on OpenSea with NFTs, because NFTs allowed you to, well, the OpenSea digital contract anyway, it forced any repurchases to put 10% back to the original creator. I was like, oh, so you can write a digital contract that funnels money automatically to different entities. And I realized suddenly that the package graph of all open source was that kind of, if you put a digital contract on it anyway, you can funnel money to all the dependencies, all the packages. So all these Nebraska projects could get like little bits of token from any insertion of token near the top. And that's how it works, right? Like people sponsor these big projects that near the top. And it's all the ones underneath that that are failing, are maintained by people without any thanks. And they're essential pieces of the modern digital infrastructure. Without them, everything would collapse. And like everything being that fragile is scary. Like people have been talking about that for a long time, how it could all collapse at any moment, but somehow it doesn't. And we're just waiting for a bigger collapse, really. But also, like, think about what would happen if it was all funded correctly. People, myself, like, make, like, occasionally big and important projects, but we have to do it in our spare time. What if I was working on that full time? And then, you know, we find security holes in OpenSSL every 2 months. What if it was funded correctly so that, well, either OpenSSL could really afford to hire people who could, you know, like kind of like a corporation is what we're thinking. Things like each of these big projects will have their own DAOs on the T protocol, and they can operate them similar to a kind of corporation. They can hire people using the token. They can split the rewards that they're getting from the T protocol across everyone who's contributing to OpenSSL. So if you open a pull request, you could end up getting paid for that pull request, because the DAO is a set of smart contracts that figure out how to channel the token based on the governance structure that those projects have chosen. So yeah, like I came up with the idea, like build a package manager and build it on top of blockchain so that open source can be remunerated. Then we managed to raise 18 million and we've been building it since. So I released the package manager itself 4 months ago, got 6,000 stars now, got some really passionate users. I think it's special. And if anyone is interested in getting involved with what we're doing, that's the place to start currently. What we got is github.com/txyz. And you can check it out, install it. And I think it's a better package manager than Brew. It's more than a package manager, really. The ideas I had over the years for how the package manager could be improved, I realized that it's a unique piece of software, right? It sits underneath all the other tooling. And there's so many things that you can do, which nobody's really tried before. I don't really get it. I think perhaps package managers just aren't very sexy, is the truth. And not many people are that interested in working on them. But for some reason, I've always enjoyed it. I love getting into that sort of area of it.
It is a brilliant idea. You are brilliant. I am honored to talk to you. If I come up with a name for this, that I will share it with you, but it's certainly a super cool and absolutely honorable, really honorable thing you're doing. I love the idea. I'm very grateful. Now I have one closing question. Maybe it involves beer drinking, but what do you do for fun? What do you do for fun if you don't do these brilliant things and manage these fantastic things you were talking about?
Yeah. Well, programming was always a hobby. So when I switched to doing it for a career, it did become kind of what I did for fun as well. But certainly, you know, I used to live in the UK. I live in the States now. And I used to love going to pubs with friends. So there was some beer drinking in my past for sure. But I got a son now. He's 10 months. And so there's certainly less beer in my life at the moment. Otherwise, for fun, blimey. I do like video games here and there. Certainly not playing them as much as I used to. And I like hiking. I like going out. I like camping. Those are some of the things that I really enjoy.
Excellent. Well, if you make it to my part of the world, I'm happy to take you out for a beer. We got some pretty good beer in Germany. So.
Oh, you do. I know.
Yes. Yes. Well, this has been fantastic. Thank you so much, Max. We have been talking to Max Howell, CEO of T.xyz and a brilliant thought leader in the topic of open source. Max, again, thank you so much for joining me today on Humans of DevOps podcast.
It's a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Humans of DevOps podcast is produced by DevOps Institute. Our audio production team includes Julia Pape, Daniel Newman Schultz, and Brendan Lay. Shout out to my colleagues who do a fantastic job. I'm Humans of DevOps podcast executive producer, Evelyn Ehrlich. If you would like to join us on a podcast, please contact us at humansofdevopspodcast@devopsinstitute.com. I'm Evelyn Ehrlich. Talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Humans of DevOps podcast. Don't forget to join our global community to get access to even more great resources like this. Until next time, remember, you are part of something bigger than yourself. You belong.